Welcome to the We Earn Media podcast. Today we have a returning guest. Johnny Sweet is with us. She is a freelance writer who focuses on travel, health, and wellness. Johnny's work has been published by Time, National Geographic, Forbes, Health Magazine, Lonely Planet, Trip Savvy, Real Simple, Yoga Journal, Frommer's, and a dozen of other publications. Johnny, like I said, is a former guest. We had her on episode number 60. Go check it out if you haven't listened to it already. We spoke to her about pitching products, specifically a pitch that inspired her to write a gift guide for Forbes. It's a great episode where Johnny talks about etiquette advice when it comes to offering a product to a journalist to test out and consider for gift guides, for example. But today we have Johnny with us to talk again about etiquette in a different world. Welcome back, first and foremost, Johnny, to the We Earn Media podcast.
Thanks for having me. I really liked speaking with you guys last time, and I'm excited to dive into a new topic.
Yes, so are we. And hi, Jackie. Say hi.
Hello. Yeah, I'm really sitting here smiling, but I'm very excited to have you back, Johnny, and to get to talk with you about what we're going to talk about.
Always crushing it with that earring game. I like the earrings you have today.
Yes. My goal is to wear a different pair each episode starting now, because I think I wore the same. It's so silly, but I was traveling the first few episodes, so I had to repeat the earrings, but I have enough. We'll make every episode different.
I like it.
Thanks.
All right. So, Johnny, what have you been up to since we last spoke? I follow along with your Substack. I'm a big fan. Seen you travel to a ton of places. Tell us more.
Yeah. So the Substack game is still going strong. I hit 1,000 subscribers a couple months ago, which felt like a big milestone for me.
Congrats.
So I'm toying around with a paid version of the Substack, but nothing's final yet. So like, keep your eyes out for that. But yeah, as Britt mentioned, I have been traveling a lot. Since we last spoke, I went to Greece. I went to Canada several times. I just got back from Dominica, which is a really amazing Caribbean island, all focused on nature. So yeah, I've been traveling a lot and still doing a lot of product reviews, a lot of sleep content, different travel stories. So yeah, I've been really busy. And in the fall, I also did a big rebranding of my site and launched some new services. So yeah, I've been really busy.
Yeah, I'd say so. I don't know how you squeeze it all in and juggle that, especially between traveling to new and exciting places. Another reason why we had you or we why we invited you to the show, you mentioned new services. I did catch the information you shared about media training, and we'd love to talk about that topic today if that sounds good to you. I'm really curious because it's something that you weren't offering the last time that we talked. What inspired you to start offering media training as a service?
So I'll talk a little bit about the service first, and then I'll talk about the inspiration behind it. Interviewing is one of my favorite parts of the job. Like, that to me is the best. You get to talk to really interesting people about the things they're really passionate and knowledgeable about. Hard word for me. So I love that. You get to learn so much from people. But, you know, no matter how much vetting you do about somebody and make sure that they have the expertise that you're looking for, sometimes their interview falls flat. And, you know, it's a shame because I know that they have the knowledge, but it's very intimidating talking to a reporter. And I think people get tripped up by that. They don't know what to say. They feel nervous. So they're not able to really let their expertise shine. So, you know, that's going on. And then meanwhile, freelance writing has been a roller coaster lately. I think any writer will tell you 2023, especially the second half of it, was really like rocky. There were tons of layoffs. Publications were closing. Rates were getting even lower. So I'm among like a cohort of writers who are now launching new services to kind of bolster our businesses and like use our expertise in different ways. So in thinking about that and in thinking about the problems some of my sources have faced over the years, I thought it would be great to leverage the expertise I have on interviewing to help people interview better. I've interviewed hundreds, possibly thousands of people in a wide range of fields, you know, academia, medicine, travel, business, all kinds of fields. And I would like to use that expertise to really help experts learn how to speak to the media in a better way and feel really confident going into every single interview that they're invited to participate in. You know, it's so easy to have your message lost if you are nervous and you don't know what to say, but I think it just requires a little bit of practice. So I launched a media coaching service. It's sort of built on a one and done model, meaning we meet for an hour, we do some mock interviews, I give you feedback, I help you finesse your messaging, and then I send you on your way. On the back end, I also create an action plan and a detailed follow-up report, you know, compiling what we talked about and areas of improvement going forward so that they can continue working on it on their own.
I love that. It's funny because it's almost the middle. It's almost like a whole universe where PRs and journalists collide, trying to figure out a way to say this that makes sense. But in my mind, I see both PRs diversifying their services and journalists, and they're like meeting in this world of media training. And it's fascinating to me. I want to get into the specifics on, if you don't mind, that prep work that you do. Personally, when it comes to media training, what I do for my own clients is mainly the clients that need handholding. I'm very grateful for the fact that I have some clients who were just camera ready as soon as I started with them, and or not even camera ready, but just, you know, they can go on podcasts, they can go and take interview phone calls quite easily, and I didn't need to do much training for them. But for those that I'm not quite comfortable with yet, they tend to ask me, my first question, of course, is going to be about questions. They always ask me, will the journalist share questions in advance? And I can't recall what we talked about. I feel like we touched upon this topic last time we spoke. And I know a lot of journalists we interview have tons of different answers. How do you approach that question, first and foremost?
I don't mind it. I see it as a little bit amateurish to ask, okay. Especially if it's coming from the PR person and not a random source that I dug up on my own. You know, on the other hand, I don't think there's anything wrong with asking it. You're never going to get what you don't ask for, right? Mm-hmm. With that said, I think it's unlikely that most journalists are going to provide those questions in advance, even if you ask for them and even if they want to. For me, I prepare my interview questions in 20 to 30 minutes leading up to my interview so that they're really fresh in my mind. The research I've done is like right there, front and center, and I can have an intelligent conversation. So that doesn't really help my source at all if I send them 3 minutes before the interview when they're actually ready. But that's sort of how my process works. There are also some other problems. Some publications actually have policies against reporters sending their questions in advance. So the journalists, even if they want to send their questions, they might not be able to. And then the other thing is it creates a situation where your answers can sound really scripted. Some of the best quotes are like off the cuff and have a lot of personality. And, you know, they sometimes come when you've been asked a question you weren't expecting. If you prepare too much, it actually makes your quotes sound really flat. So, you know, I would say like keep in mind like why you're being interviewed. Remember that like you have this expertise already. If you didn't, you wouldn't be invited for the interview. So that should be enough to like if you can talk about what you're an expert in, you'll be fine in the interview, even if you haven't had the chance to look at detailed questions ahead of time.
Yeah, that makes sense. What about, this question that I had totally escaped my mind. Jackie, did you have anything to add? I thought I saw you open your mouth.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I'm a little expressive.
Video but is I did unmute. So different.
It's It's fascinating.
Yeah. I would never know that you had a question unless I wasn't watching you. So go for it.
Oh, that's hilarious. I like that you mentioned the amateurish, because I kind of had the same thought as I, when I have a client ask for me to ask, I don't, just because I care about how I appear to the journalist. So, my personal workaround, I've kind of talked about this with other guests. I don't think you and I have talked about this, but I try to make, if I pitched the story, I try to be very specific about the subtopics we could speak to. And that can be a nice way to kind of lead your client along, or whoever you're representing. Or secondarily, you know, ask if there's any sort of subtopics we should be aware of just in case. And then third, before I hand off the mic to you, is if there are any like topics that are off limits, maybe there's like an edge of, or for an example, I have a client that does a lot of like migration studies, for instance. Being clear about my spokesperson can talk about XYZ, they might be a little limited if you ask questions about why or whatever, you know, certain other things. So that's just my little rant, but I'm curious if what your thoughts are on that.
I think that's really fair. I think, you know, at the very least, the source should be aware of who they're talking to, what publication it's for, so they kind of know maybe the angle or the tone of the story. They can even ask what the angle will be. Sometimes reporters don't know yet. That's part of why we're interviewing. But sometimes we do know. And you could also ask, like, what is prompting the article now? You know, sometimes, like, I've been assigned articles on you know, new TikTok trends and whether or not, you know, what people are doing on TikTok is like healthy or could cause harm. So if you ask sort of about the news angle, sometimes I can give you insight into like what the reporter might ask about and help sources prepare accordingly.
Genius. Yeah. I love that. It's cool.
Okay. Another debate that we have going on with guests when it comes to this topic is how do you approach when a PR person wants to sit in on the interview? How do you feel about it?
It's not my favorite, but like,
there's no right or wrong answer.
Yeah. It's not my favorite thing. I probably don't hate it as much as other journalists seem to. Like, I can work with it. But you know, I think if you're going to do it, like, make sure you're on mute. And, you know, make sure you're actually paying attention so that if we do need the assistance you can provide, you're like there. Cause there've been times I've had a PR person sit in on the interview and they're just like gone. Like, okay, well, what was the point of that? At least be present and paying attention if you're going to do that. But sometimes they can interject a little too much and try and steer the message too much. You know, I understand why that's done, especially for maybe more controversial topics. But what I work on is not controversial. It's pretty like straightforward. And, you know, I'm not doing like gotcha journalism. So it can, like, I think if you're going to sit on the call, like, have a pretty light touch, but be present and try to limit the distractions. Cause I've also had PR people forget to mute and then I can hear them talking to their colleagues and it's very distracting for me and the source. So yeah, but better yet, like, let your source just run with it. They're going to be okay. If you've prepared them right, they'll be fine. And you know, it'll be all right.
That's great. Those are great tips. Has it ever been helpful in your world?
Yeah, like, it has been helpful because sometimes a source will reference like a particular study or some other resource and the PR person will be like the person there taking notes being like, oh, we have to get that to her. So it provides good follow-up. So there are opportunities for that to be a helpful situation, I think.
Yeah, awesome. Good
that's
tips.
Key. Be a resource, not a nuisance. All right, cool. So when it comes to just common mistakes that you address with your clients or common mistakes that you see, what are those when you do your interviews?
So some of these... the biggest mistakes are not having to do with even speaking or giving quotes. It's the situations that you put yourself in when you're doing your interview. So my biggest pet peeve is when a source is trying to multitask during our interview.
Ew.
I hate it.
It's
awful.
How do they do that? What are they doing?
Okay. So frequently.
I have a story about that afterwards.
I want to hear about that. frequently, sources try and take interviews in their car.
Sorry. Sorry.
Go
remember
ahead.
That story. Sorry, Johnny.
I'm so curious. I don't think I can wait.
It's short, but maybe you go first, Johnny. I go second.
Okay. All right. So I've had sources try and do their interview in their car. And they're like paying the bridge toll, driving in a tunnel, and like the phone's cutting out. And this, you know, the speakerphone in the car is like not great. So
and it's dangerous.
It's dangerous. And you're not, you cannot present yourself in the best way if you're like driving a car and you're in traffic.
No.
It's not going to work. I've had people be walking around a city while doing their interview, and you can barely hear them because of the horns and barking mm-hmm. dogs and, you know, all the distractions. Even this week I had somebody, I was interviewing a store manager and they were running their store like while we were on the call.
Oh, no.
So that wasn't great. Cause they're like, I can hear the phone ringing in the background. They're like talking to customers. I'm like, you can't let yourself shine if you're in that environment. And I would rather we reschedule for a time that you can actually sit and be present for 15 to 20 minutes. These aren't like multiple hour long interviews. They're pretty short. So, you know, ideally you're finding like a 15 to 20 minute window of time where you can really be focused and present.
Yeah, that's good advice.
Mm-hmm. Does that relate to your story, Jackie?
Yours was probably more interesting than mine. I'll go ahead. I don't know if you're thinking about the same one, Britt. If you're not, I'm curious. If it's a different story, feel free to remind me in front of the audience if it's good. But this one, so Britt and I do this often. If a client can't take an interview, we'll see if somebody within our network can, even if they're not paying us, because we want to keep building good rapport with journalists, obviously, and that. So I was desperate to get actually a student loan expert, which we actually both work with, but well, separate ones. Either way, it doesn't matter.
Neither of our competitors.
They swim in the same sea, but they're different. They do different things.
Different fish.
But that's TMI. Neither of our experts could go on this interview, so I found a third. It took me all day to find this person, and they were like, yeah, I'll do it. And then I watched the interview. It's TV, so I'm watching the interview later at night, and I hear like, in the video Slack going off, and I look, and he's definitely got a dual monitor system, and that turd is like looking, and he's definitely reading Slack and typing in the middle of the interview as he's talking.
Oh my god.
And I'm like, good grief. So like I did
on
give
TV,
him the
oh my god
on TV. I don't
what was
get
your
it.
Feedback like, on that, Jacqueline? I can't remember. And that was the story that I was thinking of. I'm still cringing over it.
Yeah, I remember being like, Britt, should I like I'm grateful he helped me out, but at the same time, I feel like he needs to know that that's not okay. But I don't remember what I did, to be honest. I probably did tell him, or I might have even just sent the video and said, let me know if you'd like some feedback, and he didn't ask for the feedback.
I mean, it's hard because it's not your client.
It's not my mm-hmm. client, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah, so, super hard.
And he probably saw it as like doing you a favor.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
very odd.
Yikes.
Yes, that's definitely a no-no. Very. I hope that's not a common mistake, but who knows?
I mean, I don't do video interviews for the most part, and like even if I did, they're not recorded for audience viewing. So I wouldn't necessarily notice or care if a source was doing that. But you know, I would care if they're distracted. But
mm-hmm.
yeah.
If like the Slack message goes off and they kind of ignore it, I can move on. But
right,
that's different. It's like, oops, versus let me check that really quick.
Yep, exactly.
Very different.
Well, that's a really good segue into what are your tips for on-camera interviews? Do you have any just quick high-level tips for people who are doing that?
Yeah, I mean, again, it's not my area of specialty because I'm primarily working on web and in print. But I would say like have a distraction-free environment as much as possible. And I mean that, like don't try not to have like kids and dogs in the room. Try and keep your background like relatively simple to the extent that you can. You know, you want the focus on you, not what's going on in the background. And then this is a, you know, another thing everyone can do, whether they're on a TV interview or a phone interview or whatever, use the right tools. Most of my sources now, I believe, are doing our interviews on speakerphone or with like Bluetooth, earbuds, like AirPods and things like that. Neither of those lend themselves to your voice coming through consistently clearly. Even just today, this morning, I was interviewing with somebody and like every other sentence she said was kind of cutting in and out. I think her AirPods didn't have a great connection. So, you know, if I could like send all my sources a tip before our interviews, it would be like, please just like be on the phone or use a wired connection. Like mm-hmm. I'm using wired earbuds right now. They're nothing fancy, but they have a built-in microphone and the wire ensures that you're getting a pretty consistent, clear connection to the audio. So, yeah, I would say like, don't use speakerphone. If you're doing a lot of these interviews, it might even be worth investing in an external microphone. You can get them for like $50 and your voice comes through like so much more clearly.
Great tips. Yeah. And well, on that note too, you mentioned tools. How do you typically take your interviews, just out of curiosity?
I use a variety of ways. A lot of times I'm not recording because it's not necessary for every story I do. So in those cases, I usually do a phone interview. Video is not necessary and I don't like being on video more than I have to. So usually I set up a phone call and I use this set of earbuds that I'm wearing right now. And as my source is speaking, I type really, really, really fast. They can usually hear me in the background. And I have like my own set of shorthand I use so I know what they're talking about. And it kind of changes from interview to interview depending on like what we're talking about and what I can abbreviate. But I can capture a good like 95% of their quotes that way. And yeah, so that's one way. If I am recording or if I'm doing something in person, I set up a voice memo on my phone and just put it on the table and do a recording that way. And then I usually will have Otter AI transcribe it when I get home.
Wow. So you must type very fast to be able to transcribe.
My sources are always asking me, do you need me to slow down? I'm like, no, I've got it.
And then for direct quotes. I'm curious about it because for the show notes of our podcast, I tend to try to do direct quotes, but sometimes the most quotable stuff is not like always grammatically correct. Is it okay to like lightly edit that kind of stuff in the journalism world? I should know the answer to this, but I actually don't remember.
No, there's question. Really like no.
We're a little rusty.
No,
it's been a while.
There's no consensus on this. Some publications require that your quotes are like exact
to the word.
I think like the New York Times is one of those. What I was taught in journalism school is that you know, if you're speaking to somebody who has resources for media training, like a politician or a celebrity, you quote them exactly how they spoke. But if you're talking to like kind of a more normal person or like someone's grandma or that kind of thing, you can clean up their quotes a little bit to make sure you're capturing intent and meaning. And, you know, making sure they don't sound stupid because they probably didn't sound stupid during your conversation. But when you actually like, take somebody's quotes and write them down, it can be like misconstrued. So that was what I was taught in journalism school, that you can clean it up a little bit. And to be honest, I usually do clean up my sources quotes a little bit, but making sure that their meaning is intact and I'm not straying very like maybe more than 3% from what they actually said. It's very minor touch ups.
Love it. And then to build on that question, in your opinion, I know you mentioned like what a good quote typically comes from when they don't expect the question and they're able to talk off the cuff, whatever. But what do you look like? I'm sure there's so many things you could quote. What do you look for in a quote that you include in an article? Like, how does that work?
It depends. So I look for something, often short and authoritative. So I was working on a story, a few months ago about a style of interior design. I've been doing a few of these, so I don't want to say exactly which one, because I want to
look out for services. Yeah, yeah. But very exciting,
anyway,
though.
I spoke to three people. None of them could actually give me a good short quote on what this thing was. Mm-hmm. And
interesting.
And to me, that was a problem because I had to do like a big write around. My editor, like, I tried to submit the story without it getting too specific, and I got kicked back to me during revisions being, we need something very specific saying what this thing is. So I had to like kind of write around it and do a lot of heavy lifting through research and things like that just to explain something fairly simply. So ideally, like, sources are going into an interview with like a one or two or maybe three sentence explanation that's short and punchy about whatever we're talking about. Whatever their area of expertise is, like, think of it like an elevator pitch. And then it's sort of a balance between going too short and too long. I've had sources like where it's like pulling teeth to get them to say anything more than like the most simple basic of sentences, and like that I can't work with. So I have to like really pull it out of them. And then other sources have so much to say that I ask one question and they'll just run with it for our 20-minute interview. And I cannot even ask a follow-up because they're going and going and going. That's not always a disaster. Sometimes they give me enough good stuff during that I'm able to work with it. But other times I'm like missing a lot of key information and we either have to go long or do some follow-up over email, or I end up like finding somebody else to fill in the gaps. So it is sort of a balance between too long, too short. I think for the type of interviews I do, if you're answering a question in between it with, if the answer to your question is between like 45 seconds and 3 minutes, you're kind of in a good spot for me anyway.
Awesome. Yeah, very specific.
You mentioned in-person interviews, Johnny. What are those? No, I'm kidding. Tell us more about Like, when do you take in-person interviews?
So I take in-person interviews if I'm traveling and I'm like meeting with somebody I have the opportunity to interview right then and there, and
makes
I think
sense.
It's going to be fruitful. And especially if I think they might be hard to connect with when I get home. So I was actually in Barcelona in January meeting with an ethical adult filmmaker.
Interesting. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So I did interviews with her in person and her team, and I recorded those all. I think I had like 5 hours of interviews to transcribe when I got home. But yeah, that's like my first in-person interview in a very long time. So
what publication was that for?
That's for Jezebel.
That. Sounds interesting. Okay.
Yeah, cool. For Jezebel. It's not out yet as of our recording. But yeah, the editor has the draft, so I'm excited about it.
Neat. That's
did
you
cool.
pitch that story? How
yeah,
did that come
did.
To be? Now I'm all curious about the story.
Yeah, this is kind of a good one, actually. So the PR person came to me with the idea. She's like, we're doing this media trip to meet with this adult female filmmaker, and she does things very ethically and with like an eye to feminism. And she actually sent me a fantastic pitch. It had like 10 different headline proposals. Not that she was expecting me to like select one and write it out, but it just like really helped me get the ideas flowing to see like, okay, how might this look? And the information she provided was enough for me to send a pitch like pretty much right away.
Awesome.
So I told her, I was like, I don't want to commit to this trip unless I have, a strong interest from an editor, because it's a little outside my wheelhouse and I wasn't sure if I'd be able to place the story. So I emailed the editor of Jezebel because the publication was a good fit and it had recently relaunched after folding, for like the third time or whatever. And I had seen the editor put a call out for pitches. So anyway, I thought it would work, but it was like right around the holidays and I didn't hear back from the editor. So I kind of just let it go. I was like, I don't think this is going to happen. But the PR person followed up with me in early January being like, we're finalizing the trip. Do you want to come? I said, let me follow up with Jezebel. And I followed up and the editor got back to me within 5 minutes, which never happens, especially for somebody I've never worked with before. So yeah, she got back to me really fast and was like, I want this story. So a week and a half later, I was in Barcelona.
Cool.
Very cool.
So nitty gritty question here. Did the Jezebel sponsor your trip, or how did that work out?
No, it, the production team paid for journalists to come out. So they covered my travel expenses. I mean, they didn't pay me anything, but they covered the cost of me getting there so I could do the in-person work required.
Neat. Very cool. Yeah, that's fascinating. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Little sidetrack there, but really great answers.
And I mean, honestly, that story wouldn't have come into fruition if the PR person wasn't so great about her follow-up, because, you know, it's the start of the new year. I kind of like put 2023 behind me, wasn't thinking about old stories I pitched, and she followed up, and between her like great pitch and her diligent follow-up, we were able to make something really fun happen. And I've got like two or three other pitches based on the trip that I want to send out, so we might end up with more stories than that one too.
But oh my gosh, wow.
We need to do an episode so cool. on that.
Yeah, definitely. Would you mind mentioning who that person is? We can edit this out if you're not comfortable.
Her name is
This could Dawn. Be a great shout out.
I'm going to look up her last name.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Her name is Dawn Watt, and she's at Little Leap Agency, which I believe is kind of UK-based, but I think their team is spread out.
Nice. Cool. We have a bit of a UK audience and some UK folks who come on often. So
perfect.
Very neat. Yeah.
Maybe they know her.
Maybe. Awesome. Wonderful.
That's so cool.
I think I personally have covered all the questions I had about media training, but is there anything that I didn't ask? Any other questions that you have, Jackie?
No, I really enjoyed listening to how a journalist approaches interviews, because I it's such a great topic. Like, I obviously, we know that we have to prepare our clients for them and stuff, but it was so cool to hear it from a journalist point of view. So it sounds like media training from a journalist is like a pretty valuable thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I think PR people offer fantastic media training, but unless they were a journalist in a past life, which some of them were, they just don't have that experience, that like hands-on experience that we have.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So even before the pandemic, I had started working with some PR agencies to come in and be like the real journalist during media training and do mock interviews during their media training.
Very
so that
cool.
was like early 2020, I had started doing that and that in person, and it all kind of fell apart. So I'm really glad to pick it back up and kind of own what I'm doing now and partner with folks like you guys to work with your clients and help get them media ready. I think it's fun.
That is great.
That is great. Awesome.
Can I share one other mistake that I
Oh my gosh,
to
yeah.
If we have
yes.
time.
Yes,
okay. absolutely.
Let's go.
We need to talk about going off the record.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Okay.
So many times I'll be on an interview with somebody and they'll give me like something really interesting. And then immediately after they'll say, but that's off the record.
What?
No.
Yeah, it happens all the time. So I think sources need to understand that when they're speaking to a journalist, everything is on the record unless both you and the journalist agree before you say something that it is off the record.
Yes.
You know, the type of work I do and the like way I approach relationships, if somebody says something is off the record after the fact, I pretty much always respect it, but that's not going to be true with every journalist. And even then, sometimes I'll go back and say, hey, I know you said this was off the record, but could we talk about it in this way? I'll try and negotiate that. But a lot of journalists aren't going to give somebody that grace, though, especially if you give them something really juicy, they're going to run with it. So sources need to know that like off the record is a mutual agreement, not something you can just say after the fact. It doesn't work like that.
That's a good reminder. I did learn that in school. I do remember that. And you're right. Like there's no, it's not like a legally, you don't just say something and it's like legally bound. Right.
All the time people say it. Like we'll be like in the middle of a conversation, like, but that's off the record. And usually whatever they said is inconsequential anyway. So okay, fine, let's put it off the record, whatever. It doesn't matter. But
like it's just cheeky. But
Yeah. I think people forget that. And you know, a lot of people who don't speak to the media often or haven't received media training just don't know this. So I think especially like this is an area PR people can teach their clients a little bit. And just remind them that, like, you know, anything you say is pretty much on the record. So, yeah.
Good reminder.
My last little thing.
No, that's wonderful. So good. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming onto the show, Johnny.
Thanks for having me. This was really fun. And anytime you want me back, happy to come on and chat with you guys.
Yes. Actually, before you go, can you remind our listeners where they can find you online, whether it's X or Twitter, LinkedIn, how they can find your Substack? We'll have a link to that in the show notes, but just for the audio version.
Yeah, so everything's pretty much under my name, Johnny Sweet. And Johnny is J-O-N like Nancy I. Sweet is how you would describe candy. Yes, that is my real name. So you can go to johnnysweet.com. You can go to at Johnny Sweet on Twitter X. You can look that up on Substack and you should find my newsletter pretty much right away. But yeah, I always love hearing from people. Feel free to reach out if you heard the podcast and want to chat further. I'm always interested in hearing from people I haven't yet had the opportunity to talk to.
Thank you for listening to this episode of We Earn Media. Jacqueline and I have a bit of a favor to ask. If you find the podcast useful and have an extra minute or two to spare, we would be incredibly grateful if you could take just a moment to leave a rating. Your feedback means the world to us, and it helps others discover our show. Thank you so much, listeners, for being a part of our PR community, and we can't wait to hear what you think.